what we've got here is not a new issue, right? Every generation has its version of acculturated Christianity. This seems to be ours. And, you know, you recognize this from the movie Dogma. And this, is anybody here Methodist? So I'm going to have to talk about my own tribe without allies. This is from a Methodist church sign, which is about doing something nice for someone, which was kind of like, is that the best we can do, really? So, all right. Actually, the title of the book, Almost Christian, comes from a John Wesley sermon. Actually, George Whitefield also preached a sermon by the same title, and it was aimed at the same problem, you know, the indifferent spirituality of the realm. You know, this was a sermon Wesley preached at Oxford to college students and their professors. So the question is, how is it that we keep letting this mutant strain of Christianity kind of overtake the claims of the gospel? And there are lots of complex reasons for that, and there are going to be people speculating about this probably for the next umpteen years. But here's the one that I could not escape, and so this is what I focused on. And that is, I think part of the reason for this self-serving spirituality kind of creeping in is that in the United States, Americans have lost track of the church's missional imagination. And what I mean by that is something very basic, and that is the idea that that the church exists for anybody other than ourselves. You know, we're just not here for ourselves. That's what it means to be a missional church. And the catch is, we think that mission is something that you go on, right? But just take this idea home with you. Mission is not a trip, okay? I don't know what happens in churches in South Africa, but one of the most common things that youth ministers do in the United States is they orchestrate mission trips that happen in the summer. They typically go to an impoverished area. You can tell this is a middle-class phenomenon, right? If you live in a poor town, you typically don't have the money to go on a mission trip. People come to you. But what happens is people get in a van, they go to some far-flung place, they repair people's homes. When I was in college, I was on staff of one of these places. I hope the porches of those poor people's houses are still standing. Probably not. But anyway, this is the way churches think about mission. And what happens is they wind up deploying young people to kind of do mission on behalf of the rest of the church, as though mission were something that any of us can opt out of. But what I want to stress is that mission is the very identity of the church. If you don't have a mission, you're not a church. You're something else, right? You don't form a church and then get a committee to look around and go, okay, now what's our mission going to be? If we don't have a mission, we're not a church. So mission's not a church activity, it's not a youth trip, it's not a model of ministry, there are books out there that suggest that. It's not an option, it is the business we are in. And that includes young people. So exercising a missional imagination means embodying and helping young people embody God's passionate, self-giving love, right? And we do that for everyone that Christ has put on our path. And the point is that we do that because this is the way God interacts with us. This is the way God approaches the world. God's love is so profuse that God could not contain it all within the Godhead, and God's overpouring, overflowing love is how we were created in the first place and how the incarnation and everything else happens. And unless the church's missional imagination is enacted by the church, then all we can be about is training fleas. Now, what that means, at least for where I come from, this is we have to change our head around about how we think about mission in the United States. It's a very different approach to the way we generally think about mission. So here's my object lesson. Can you all see this bowl here? Okay. So, this is the world. Okay. This is us. And now, we belong in the world here, but so you can see it, I'm going to hold it up. Okay, just imagine it being in the bowl. Okay, and this is God's grace right here, okay? So what we think of mission looks something like this. Here, wait a second. Let me give you a picture. Okay, this is the way we think of mission. We have to go put ourselves in the way of God's grace. So we go to a Christian community, or we go to church, we worship, we pray, we do all these things that put ourselves in the way of God's grace so that God can fill us up. Okay, and then we look around and we say, okay, who can I go dump Jesus on? And we go dump some Jesus on somebody. But then we're empty again. Okay, so we got to go back. We got to get ourselves some more of God. God, fill us up some more. Okay, let me go find somebody and let me go dump Jesus on them again. And this keeps going on, right? So we go, we're exhausted now. We're empty again. Got to go find me some more Jesus and go dump Jesus on somebody. Well, okay, there are a million things wrong with this, not the least of which is that Jesus is not some family heirloom that is ours to bestow on others, right? Jesus is there before we got there. Jesus will keep being there after we're gone. All right, so I think maybe a better way to think about this might look something like this. Now, because I'm a Methodist, I would say we don't ever start on empty, so we'll start with that a little bit. A little prevenient grace going in the cup right there. All you Reformed people can argue about that later. Okay, I think maybe a better way to think about, yes, it's true. You know, we are still in the world. We still have to place ourselves in the way of God's grace. But what happens is, God does not know when to quit. God keeps pouring God's grace into us again and again and again until we can't hold it all. The church can't hold it all. So God's grace splashes off of us, the church, into the world around us. And the only catch is we have to stay close enough to the source of God's grace and the people in the world who need to get wet. So I wonder whether that would be a way to reimagine the way we think about our task and mission, which means we need a different kind of metaphor than a trip to think about what we are up to here. So I don't know how many of you have read Mark DeVries' work, but Mark DeVries talks about the light bulb view of youth ministry, which is where churches think about a youth minister as a light bulb. You know, and so they go find some bright light for Jesus, right? And they install the youth minister until what happened? And the youth minister's a really bright light in that congregation until?
Burnout,
right? Then what do? You replace the light bulb and it goes again and again and again. It's like, yeah, anyway. So look, Christian tradition is filled with these images of the inseparability of the church and mission. So Emil Brunner says the church exists by mission as fire exists by burning. Karl Barth talked about the church existing for the world. John Wesley talked about the impossibility of receiving God's grace without breathing it back into creation. It is as impossible to experience God's grace without sending it back into the world as it is to inhale without exhaling. Everybody, hold your breath for a minute. So what do you want to do? You got to exhale. To receive God's grace means we have to exhale back into the world. So we can't just keep God's grace for ourselves. And it's not because of any resolve on our part. It's because God's love doesn't know when to quit. And God's love exceeds our capacity to hold it all. And it flows into the world through the church. So if mission isn't about dumping Jesus on people, then how might we describe it? I'm going to borrow from a missiologist named Andrew Walls, who talks about mission as translation. He believes that Jesus Christ, the incarnation, is God's perfect translation. But then he says we are called to be translations as well. We'll come to that. So translation doesn't dump Jesus on people. Basically, good translation, and you guys do this, Americans are awful about not only speaking English, and I am so sorry that I do not know how to talk to you in your own language. But, you know, Anita, you go back and forth, you know, translating like you don't even think about it, I don't think. You just sort of do it, you know, and first there's Afrikaans, and then there's English, and I don't know what else you got up your sleeve there, but... So it's this elegant little dance, and the idea is not to add something to the conversation that isn't already there. I mean, good translations, it's never perfect, right? But the idea is to have the same sense in one language that you have in the other. And you take a conversation that is already in progress, and you make it accessible to people who are on the outside of it. That's what translation does. Okay, so when you're talking in Afrikaans and then Anita switches to English, all of a sudden I get to play too. You know, otherwise I'm kind of watching from the outside. So this is the image that Walls has for what mission is. It's taking this conversation that God is already in, it's already in progress, God's conversation with the world. But our job as a church is to make that conversation accessible to people who are on the edges of it, to people who can't play because they don't really know what is being said in the middle. So translation takes this facts that we already have, see, it's a hermeneutical move, and makes them accessible to people on the outside. So, yes, Jesus is God's perfect translation in human form, okay? But Walls says, yeah, but you know what? We are called to be translations of the gospel too. We are lesser translations, of course, but we're translations nonetheless, and he keys off of this text to say that, as the Father has sent me, so I send you. Right. So the same dynamics that govern the transmission of faith across geographic lines, you know, we think of that as a geographic image. We're going to cross a border that's a geographic border as mission. It also governs the transmission of faith across generational lines. Right? And so the very same dynamics are true. We have to be human translations of God's love for our own children. You know, Nika was talking about the sons and daughters today. And one of the reasons I think I'm so convinced that youth ministry is part of my call is that it crosses all sorts of divides that are there in the church. You know, because no matter who you are in the church, no matter what you go to the mat for, at the end of the day, all of us, every one of us, goes home and prays for our children. That's one thing that we as a church do in common. So we have to be human translations to our own children, to people who are sent into the world as God's envoys. Not just where the Father has sent me, but as, pay attention to that little word, as the Father has sent me, in the same way as the Father has sent me, as a human being, as the Father has sent me. In human form, we are called to carry God's love into the world. Okay, so then, how do we translate the gospel from one generation to the next? I'm going to leave you with one last set of thoughts here. If you don't remember anything else in terms of rules for translations, it's hilarious that I'm telling you about translations since you guys do it all the time. Remember this rule. The best translators are people, not programs. I don't know if you've ever tried to use a computer program to translate anything. How'd that work out? Yeah. We call them wooden translations because there's no life in them. They seem stilted, artificial, weird, you know? And guess what? If the only way we translate the gospel with young people is through a program, it's going to feel wooden and lifeless and artificial and stilted and weird to them. So what mattered in the National Study of Youth and Religion when they did the longitudinal studies was not, it turned out, things like mission trips, but practices that put us in the way of grace, like scripture reading and prayer, the community of faith. That might happen on a mission trip, but it's not the only thing that would happen there. But it put people in conversation with other people who could translate the gospel for them, whose lives became emblematic of what the gospel represents. So what we need are human translators, people whose lives speak the upside-down hermeneutic of the gospel. And unfortunately, a lot of times our translations wind up looking like this. Now, I've got to brace you for this video, okay? Because this is a parent trying to do her best. It's not going well. This is a home video. I have my imagination says that a younger brother on the far side of the dining room thought it would be a good time to turn the phone on for this because it was going to be a show not to be missed. The language in it is terrible, okay? Just warning you of this. It's a real scene. And basically what's happened is this. Michael is 15. He's just gotten himself confirmed. And he decides now would be a good time to tell his mom that he's an atheist. Okay?